Part 1.
You will hear a telephone conversation between a customer and a telephone service representative. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 6. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 6.
Hello, Cheap Calls Unlimited. This is Adam O'Shaughnessy. How can I help you?
Yes, I heard something on the TV the other day about cheap local and national calls. Do you have a new offer available at the moment?
That's right. You would have heard about our special no-limit offer.
Oh, how does it work? How can I save?
Well, do you make many calls outside your local area?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. I often call my mother-in-law in Sydney, and sometimes I call Perth and Melbourne. We've got family there.
Okay, where would you be calling from?
Brisbane.
Right, this would be perfect for you. How it works is you tell us which city you call the most, and we'll set up a special offer for 3 cents per minute, no matter what time of the day you call. But it gets better. We also offer 10-cent local calls. No other telephone carrier can offer you such a cheap plan.
Wow, that is cheaper than what I currently pay. But what about international calls? I often call America. What are your rates to the States?
Our rates to the USA are also competitive. You can call America for 6 cents per minute. This also includes a connection fee of 15 cents.
That's competitive, all right. So, how do I sign up?
Well, we can do it right here over the phone if you like. Or I can send you out an application form. Or I can email the details with a form attached. Which would you prefer?
Well, how long will it take over the phone?
Oh, just a matter of 4 or 5 minutes.
Okay, let's do it now.
Right then. First off, I need your name and address.
Okay, my name is Mandy Silverstone. That's S-I-L-V-E-R-S-T-O-N-E. My address is 16 Hazelwood Street. That's H-A-Z-L-E-W-O-O-D Street, Belmont, 4173.
Good. Now what about your telephone number, date of birth, and do you have an email address?
Yes. The telephone is 5522-3481. My date of birth is July 13th, 1972, and my email address is mandy@telly.com. That's mandy@telly.com. Why do you need my date of birth?
Before you listen to the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 7 to 10.
Right, okay. Yes, we'll request your date of birth for security reasons. We'll ask you this each time you call us to request information about your account. Not for making a payment, but, you know, if you wish to change any of your details or change your plan, you know, those kind of things.
Okay, I understand.
Okay, right. Well, we're finished. Do you have any other questions at all?
Yes. When does this new service actually start?
Yes, I'm going to send the information to our sales department. They'll process it today and your new service will be ready tomorrow. By next month, you'll really start to experience the savings.
Fantastic. Okay, well, that's all I wanted to know. Oh, when will I receive the bill?
That'll be 1 month from the day you signed up. It'll be sent on the same day every month thereafter, unless you request a change. We can send them every 2 or 3 months if you prefer.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part two.
Part two.
Listen to the conversation between two students, John and Carol. They have a list of the names of authors whose books have been given to the library. They have to classify the authors as writers of cookery, sports, or travel books.
First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 15.
This is a great collection of books, isn't it?
Very impressive. Who gave them to us?
Apparently the donor was a book reviewer. There are a lot of books about sport. Here's one, My Life in Cricket.
Well, that's certainly sports. Who's the author?
Peter Adams.
He also wrote Journeys Through Spain.
Did he?
Peter Adams writes books on both sports and travel, so ST is written against his name. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Now listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 8.
This is a great collection of books, isn't it?
Very impressive. Who gave them to us?
Apparently the donor was a book reviewer. There are a lot of books about sport. Here's one, My Life in Cricket.
Well, that's certainly sports. Who's the author?
Peter Adams.
He also wrote Journeys Through Spain.
Did he?
Next one is Stephen Bowell.
He wrote Summer Barbecues, Cooking for Singles, Dinners by Candlelight.
Anything else?
No. Do you have anything by Pam Campbell?
Wanderings in Greece, My Life in Russia, Travels in the Amazon, and Pam Campbell's Guide to a Successful Trip.
Sounds like she got around. My next one is C. Ketzik.
He has a list of books about football, the World Cup, Heroes of the World Cup, Playing with the Round Ball, Soccer for Everyone.
That's enough. He was a one-topic writer. Ari Hussein, however, wrote about cooking and travel. His series of cookbooks is called Living and Cooking in Spain, Living and Cooking in China, Living and Cooking in Brazil. He's been everywhere.
I've got a specialist here, Sally Innes on tennis. Here are some of her titles. Improve Your Serve, Tennis for Everyone, Tennis Forever.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 16 to 20.
Sally Innes on tennis. Here are some of her titles. Improve Your Serve, Tennis for Everyone, Tennis Forever.
Meg Jorgensen has three books, one in each category. Cooking for Health, Sport is Good for You, and Travelling in Australia.
A varied talent. Who's next?
Bruno Murray. He wrote children's books, a whole series called A Child's Guide To, and then The Name of the City.
Oh, you mean like A Child's Guide to London?
Yes, that's right. He seems to have stayed in Europe. Ruby Lee, however, has just one book. It's called The Emerald Isle, and it's all about Ireland. Apparently she went around Ireland on foot.
Jim Wells wouldn't like that. His books are all about motor racing. Nice photos of old racing cars. Don't you love the goggles on the driver?
They do look strange, don't they? I think we're nearly finished. What did Helen Young write?
Summer Menus, Food for Thought. She also did a book of Chinese recipes, Cantonese, I think.
Okay, that's dealt with the first box. Let's stop for a minute.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
CD 3. Test 5. Section 3. You will hear a business studies student called Sam talking to his tutor about an IT project he is going to do for a local company called Turner's. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 26. Now listen and answer questions 21 to 26.
Hello, Sam. Come in and sit down.
Thanks.
You're here to discuss your company-based IT project, aren't you?
Yes. I've been to see the manager and he's given me a lot of ideas about projects that the company would find useful. But I wanted to ask your opinion about them before I choose one.
Yes, that's fine. Now, this company's called Turner's, isn't it?
That's right. It's a small engineering company. They make machine components for trade use. They're well established. They started in 1976, but they're a bit old-fashioned.
Okay. And what kind of projects did Turner's suggest you could do for the company?
Well, they want some improvements made to their customer database. The one that they've got at the moment isn't very useful in some ways. I had a quick look at it.
That would be a very straightforward project, and it'd be simple enough to evaluate, but I don't think you'd get enough out of a project like that. You wouldn't learn anything new.
Well, another project they suggested is to do with their online sales catalogue. At the moment, customers can look at their products, but they can't actually order them online, which must affect their competitiveness. But I said I thought it would take too long. It's quite a big task.
You're right. It's too much for the time you've got. It's a pity, though.
Then they want some help with their payroll system. At the moment, the way they calculate pay involves a lot of manual accounting. I suggested they could have a system where employees register electronically when they arrive and leave work, so the hours they do could be transferred automatically.
I think you'd get a lot out of a project like that. It would extend your skills, but it wouldn't be too much to take on. A student did something similar a couple of years ago, but this is slightly different.
Well, then they need help with their stock inventory. They do everything manually.
Really?
Yes, and it takes so much time.
Ugh, it's probably very inaccurate, too. An electronic inventory would probably be the biggest single benefit for the company. I'm surprised they haven't had it done before.
I know. Then they wanted to improve their internal security. The manager had visited other companies where the staff use swipe cards to access various areas of the building. Sounded useful, but the trouble is I'm not really sure how to do it.
Well, I think you're right in that assessment. At the moment, it's probably a bit beyond your level of knowledge. Is that all?
Just one more. Customer service. They want to be able to collect feedback from their customers in a more systematic way. At the moment, it's a bit of a mess, and they probably lose business as a result.
Would that involve you going to see customers at their own premises? Because in that case, you might have to do a fair amount of traveling, and that would incur expenses that haven't been agreed with these companies.
I never thought of that.
Well, it might not be a problem, but it's something that needs clarifying. Well, I hope that's been helpful in narrowing down the options.
Yes, it has. Thanks. I'll be able to make a decision now. But while I'm here, can I talk to you about coursework?
Sure.
Now you have some time to look at questions 27 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 27 to 30.
I'm not very happy about the way our group assignment is working. There are some problems.
Oh dear. Are people just not getting on with each other? That's the worst thing.
Actually, we're all friends. It's not that. But when we're having a discussion about the assignment, one or two people end up doing all the talking and the rest don't say anything. It's a bit frustrating because we need plenty of debate.
Well, that's a common observation. You're studying in a group with people from all over the world, and you all have your own ways of participating. In some places, students are more used to listening than talking, and vice versa.
I suppose you're right. I'll try to remember that.
Does everyone pull their weight as far as sharing the workload is concerned?
I'd say they do, yes. And our group elected a leader. She's very good at making sure no one's overloaded. But personally, I feel that there are just too many of us in the group. Whenever we try to arrange a meeting, there's always at least one person who can't make it. It's not anyone's fault. It's just that we've all got slightly different timetables.
Well, I'm glad you've talked to me about it. Feedback is always useful. Is there anything else you're concerned about?
There are a couple of problems with lecturers that all the students are talking about.
Last semester we had negative feedback about the way lectures were organized. There were several occasions when the wrong room had been booked or the same room had been booked twice, that sort of thing. Is that still a problem?
That hasn't happened at all as far as I know.
Oh, good. It's sorted out then.
But I don't know the reason, but some of the staff often turn up late, so we miss 10 or 15 minutes of our lecture time. It might be because they've been copying handouts for students. I think there's a queue for the machine sometimes.
Well, I'll look into that. Thank you for telling me. Anything else?
The other thing is that it can be very difficult to get to see a lecturer individually. They're all very supportive and friendly when you do manage to find them, but often they're not in their office, even at times when they're meant to be available for consultation.
Okay, that's helpful. Now, before you leave,
That is the end of section 3. You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part 4.
Part 4.
You'll hear a teacher talking about several British art galleries. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 33. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 33.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the first class of V100 Art and History. The objectives of the course, as you will have seen if you've taken a look at the syllabus, include familiarizing yourselves with the vocabulary and language of art, learning about the basic elements of art and design, and finally, discussing historical periods as they pertain to art. The course will also give you the opportunity to visit some of the many galleries and museums that Britain has to offer. So, having said that, I'd like to spend the rest of today's class talking about four of the more important galleries that we will be visiting in the coming year. As most of you already know, or at least I hope most of you know, there are 4 Tate Galleries in all. To begin, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the Tate Modern. Tate Modern is located in a very busy part of London called the South Bank. It's close to 2 world-renowned tourist attractions, St. Paul's Cathedral and Shakespeare's Globe Theatre. Now, interestingly enough, Tate Modern is housed in what was a power station, built in several stages between 1947 and 1963. It was closed down in 1981 and reopened as a gallery in the year 2000. Tate Modern consists of 5 levels, with the Tate Collection being shown on the 3rd and 5th levels. On level 2, the works of contemporary artists are exhibited, while level 4 is used for holding large temporary exhibitions. Since this museum opened, it has become a popular spot for both Londoners and tourists alike. And believe it or not, it doesn't cost anything to get in to see the collection displays.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 34 to 40. Now listen and answer questions 34 to 40.
Now, the second gallery I'd like to talk about is Tate St. Ives, which is in Cornwall. It was built on the site of a gasworks, and it overlooks Porthmeor Beach. Tate St. Ives is housed in a 3-story building that was designed by the architects Evans and Shalliff. It was established in 1993, 7 years before Tate Modern was opened, and the gallery exhibits the works of modern British artists, including members of the St. Ives School, a group of artists living and working in the area from the 30s onwards. In later lectures, we'll be looking at the work of some of the artists who belong to that group and the ways in which they influenced each other. Okay, am I going too fast for any of you? No? Good. Next, I want to talk about Tate Britain, which is a gorgeous gallery situated right in the heart of Westminster. Tate Britain was the first of the 4 Tate galleries to open, and it was established in 1897. It was built on the site of an old prison, and when it first opened its doors, it was called the National Gallery of British Art. Later, it became known as the Tate Gallery, after the man who founded it, Sir Henry Tate. During its lifetime, Tate Britain has been damaged twice, once by floodwaters from the River Thames, and once by bombings during World War II. This gallery has an interesting range of exhibitions of historic and modern art from 1500 up to the present day. Now, the last gallery I'd like to tell you about is called Tate Liverpool. It's not hard to figure out where this gallery is located, is it? It was opened in 1988 to exhibit displays from the Tate Collection, and it also has a program of temporary exhibitions. Tate Liverpool is housed in what was once a warehouse, and for some years it was one of the biggest galleries of modern and contemporary art in the UK. Well, that's a brief overview of just a few of the galleries we'll be visiting. I'd like now to look in a little more detail at what you can expect to see in each of these galleries, starting with Tate Britain.
That is the end of part 4.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.